Birth, Chapter 20. Dick opened his eye with the soft jolt of the G7 touching down at Gulfport International Airport. For the first time since the crash, he slept without breaking into a cold sweat and hitting the wall. Perhaps he had finally resolved that challenge in his mind. He was calm inside, like he had found the final piece to a puzzle he was working on the kitchen table. The rest of the passengers woke up as the pilot tapped the brakes and taxied to the general aviation section of the airport. He pulled up to the hangar and shut down the engines. "We're going to need a few pounds of fuel," said the co-pilot. "Smith?" queried the pilot as he took off his light green DC headset. "Yes?" "We're going to need fuel. How long are you going to be?" "Our coordinates are across the street. It is 4:21 a.m. now. We should be no more than 30 minutes if we have no troubles," said Smith. He motioned to Jones, who jerked the bottom of his suit jacket as though shaking out any wrinkles he might have gotten during the flight from Victorville. "We'll be back with our guest," said Smith. He rotated the handle on the door and pushed the air stairs down into the cool Gulfport humidity. He stepped out onto the top step and took a deep breath. It was quite a change from the arid, high desert air in Southern California. He shuffled down the steps and onto the tarmac. He needed a car. Smith and Jones walked to the pilot's prep office. It was always open at General Aviation. Jets left and arrived at all hours from all over the world, especially since BP's Mississippi headquarters had moved here in 2005. A young man approached the counter as they walked into the lobby. "Good morning, gentlemen. How can I help you?" "We are just here to pick up an associate staying nearby. Would it be possible to rent or borrow a car?" asked Smith. The man looked at the two of them. Jones smiled calmly and tried not to look like he was assessing a threat or standing at attention. "Well, the rental counter doesn't open for another 2 hours. We have a station wagon. I can let you borrow that, if it's not going to be too long," said the man with a trusting voice. That was Southern hospitality, thought Smith. Two well-dressed strangers walk in and you just loan them your car. That would never happen in D.C. "Thanks so much. We should be no more than 30 minutes. We're only a couple of blocks." Can we bring you back anything? A coffee? Asked Smith as he reached for the keys being handed to him. "No, that's okay. You need any fuel?" asked the man. "Yes, as a matter of fact. Our pilot is coming in now to make those arrangements. Thanks again. We'll be back soon," said Smith. He turned with Jones and headed for the station wagon parked outside the front door of the General Aviation office that faced the parking lot outside the secure airport perimeter fence. They would be scanned coming back in. That could be a problem, he thought. "Let's go get our boy," said Jones. The station wagon was old and ran like a top. It was discreet, he thought. No blinking blue lights or massive bulletproof Escalade with a police escort. Nice and quiet and plain-looking was the way to go this morning. "How are we doing?" asked Smith, who was driving. Make a left at the light. We're close," said Jones, looking at his smartphone with the tracking app running. He had the exact coordinates from the satellite and a charge card record from Motel 6, so he knew what he was looking for. "There's the sign. Turn right up there and go down the backside." Smith killed the lights as he bounced into the Motel 6 parking lot. He went around to the front lobby and Jones got out. Smith stayed in the car. "I'll find his room." He swung open the lobby door and noticed the clock on the wall. 4:30 a.m. He rang the bell on the counter and a young girl came around the wall dividing the back office from the counter. She smiled and said in a Mississippi drawl, "Good morning. Welcome to Motel 6. What can I do for you?" "I'm here to pick up a friend. His name is Orfan Bayazed," said Jones. "Well, I will call his room and let him know," she said. "Which room is it, please, so I can help him with his bags?" asked Jones. "Well, I'm not supposed to give out that information," she paused with the receiver in her hand. "It's quite all right, miss," he said, with his hand softly on the counter in plain sight. "You can go with me and show me the door. You don't have to tell me anything, okay?" giving the girl a choice that she tried to translate into action. She could make sure her guest was all right. If there was trouble, she could call 911. She had never escorted someone to a room before, but he was so handsome, and the suit was expensive, and he was young and sounded so educated. It would be fine. "Okay, it's just around the corner here. Come on," she said, walking around the counter and leading him to the front door. They walked around the corner and up the metal stairs to the second floor walkway. They walked down to room 205, and she held out her hand. "Room 205, here we are," she said in a soft southern voice, as though not to awaken anyone who might be sleeping. Jones knocked gently on the door. There was no light on. A few seconds later, the door rattled as the safety latch moved against the door, opening slightly. "Mr. Bayazet, your father sent me," said Jones. "Okay," said Orphan. "Give me a second." He was still tired, only 3 hours' sleep after all that had happened in the last 2 days. He was groggy. He didn't know this man in the suit, but who else on the planet would know that his father was sending someone for him? He didn't look like a BP puke. They all smelled of oil anyway. Dad used to say that pungent sulfur smell was the smell of money, but it was impossible to wash out of your clothes. They all smelled the same. The door closed again and the safety latch was moved away. "Well, I guess you'll be okay now," asked the girl. "Yes, you've been perfect. Thanks so much," said Jones, extending his hand to shake hers. His hand was so warm, she thought. She smiled, and he could not see her blush in the darkness. "Y'all come back," she said, sliding her hand out of his. That was the way to say goodbye in the South, Jones thought. Spanish people wave backwards, which Americans think means come here, when they are actually saying the same thing with their hands. "Y'all come back." Made so much sense, reasoned Jones, as he watched the girl's head disappear down the steps. The door opened again, and Orphan had nothing but his shoulder bag. "That's it?" asked Jones. "Let's go," said Orphan, resolving to be a man of few words this morning. "Silence is strength," his father used to tell him. "Say nothing, and be firm about it," he would say. He never understood that until this very minute. Jones turned and walked swiftly toward the old station wagon. "What's this?" asked Orphan. "Airport car," said Jones. "Get in." "Whatever," said Orphan. He was feeling aggravated for some reason, probably from no sleep. He sat in the back and closed the door as he sat behind Jones on the passenger side. "I am Secret Service Agent Smith," said Smith as he turned around from the driver's seat. "Your father asked us to pick you up. Are you all right?" "Yes, I'm okay. I just wanted to make sure, you know." "You're in good hands, Orphan," said Smith. "We better stop here and fill this car up and get something to eat." "There's a Circle K right on the corner up there," said Orphan. They pulled up to the outside pump and Jones got out to pump. "Stay in the car. Don't look toward those cameras. I'll be right back," said Smith. The handle clicked off just as Smith was emerging from the store with two sacks of supplies. Jones put the handle back on the pump and opened the passenger door behind the driver's seat. Smith tossed the supplies on the seat, and Jones shut the door and skipped around to the passenger side while Smith got in. They had no time to waste. It would be light soon. Smith tossed the keys to the general aviation station manager behind the counter. "I filled it up for you," he said. "Wow, you didn't have to do that," said the man. "No. Think nothing of it. We're just returning the favor. Thanks for letting us use it," said Smith. "No problem. Hey, safe flying. Y'all come back." That southern charm. One day he would retire, he thought. Maybe the South was the place to be. "Let's go. Wheels up. Let's go," said Smith as he, Orphan, and Jones bounded up the air stairs with the supplies. Smith pulled the air stairs in and latched the door. He turned toward the cabin. "Everybody use the facilities? We're good to go?" asked Smith. "Is that food?" asked Rhino.
"Animal," said Bet.
"Yes," said Jones, handing the sacks to Kyle and Dick, who were seated in the front two seats.
"Ah, yes, Slim Jims," said Dick. He took two sticks and a Pepsi and handed the bag over his shoulder to Rhino.
"There's more in there," said Smith. They each took something to stave off the hunger from the long night. The pilot could be heard negotiating with the tower for clearance to take off. There was no fog on the runway this morning, so they could leave right away. Smith felt safe for once. There was no chase. There were no missiles. No one was shooting at them. He relaxed for a moment and reflected on this strange mission and the wonderful people that occupied this cabin at this time.
Sure beats a plane load of drunken politicians making deals with other people's lives.
He took a seat next to Jones and extended his right hand. "So far, so good," he said, returning Jones's strong grip.
"Next stop, Camp David," he said as he leaned his head back and closed his eyes, for it seemed like the first time in days.